It's time for a more in-depth look at today's news. It's time to find out who's pulling the strings. It's time for the Behind the Curtain podcast with your host, author Jeff Reynolds.
Hi, I'm author Jeff Reynolds, and this is episode 29 of the Behind the Curtain podcast. Before we begin, I want to remind you to check out my new website, www.jeffreyreynolds.net, and you spell Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-E-R-Y. This is where you'll find all my content from all the different platforms where my articles can be read. Also, I want to ask you a favor. When you go to jeffreyreynolds.net, please sign up for the newsletter. I won't spam you, and I'll send out a couple of emails a month, tops. This allows me to keep you updated on all the cool new stuff I'm doing. I made it really easy, too. Just go to the website and click on the link above that says subscribe to the newsletter. And oh, by the way, just a pro tip, I'm going to have a lot of new stuff in 2021, so you'll definitely want to get signed up and see all of the cool new stuff I'm going to be doing and be the first to know. And if you like this podcast, please consider a paid sponsorship. You can help support this podcast with a small monthly donation. The more I can monetize the podcast, the more time I can spend on it, and the better and more consistent the content will be. Go to anchor.fm/behindthecurtain and click on the big old support button right at the top of the page. The first segment is an interview with Will Christensen, president of the College Republicans at the University of Oregon. Will found himself in hot water with the student senate after Democratic and leftist activists on campus called him out for a photo on Instagram. The College Republicans attended a Stop the Steal rally in Salem, and in the background of one of the pictures, a flag for the Proud Boys could be seen. We talked about the ridiculous double standard wrapped in a giant overreaction inside a virtue signal that was the Senate hearing. The Senate actually passed a resolution naming the College Republicans and a board member of theirs a troubling breach of protocol. The non-binding resolution calls on all student groups to be more aware of what they post. Will tells me that he has reason to fear that this could lead to future withholding of funds by the student union. The University of Oregon College Republicans can be found at uocollegerepublicans.com, and they are currently taking donations to help with their legal fight and insulate against any future consequences with their funding. My second interview this week is with Glenn Tate, author of the 299 Days series of books. Glenn hosts a podcast with his wife, fellow author Shelby Gallagher, on emergency preparedness. In his other life, Glenn is an attorney who has worked on federal voter fraud cases. I actually interviewed Glenn the week before Election Day and discussed the potential for voter fraud. We discussed the potential for widespread voter fraud across America and the potential that it could lead to further political unrest beyond what we've already seen in 2020. We examined the opportunities for voter fraud in vote-by-mail, foreign influence over the voting process, and how the postal system could complicate the vote in the age of COVID-19. Sound familiar? You should definitely check out this interview. You can find all things Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher on their website, prepping2-0.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Behind the Curtain podcast wherever you listen to it, and please leave a positive rating. The more subscribers and the better ratings, the higher Behind the Curtain will rank on podcast services like Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, among many others. Stick around to the very end so you can hear the full version of I Am America, the theme song, by my buddy Brian Futch. Hey, did you know I wrote a book? It's called Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. It's an examination of the dark money on the left that continues to fuel the worst of the swamp creatures in Washington, D.C. There's a real appetite out there for folks to learn about who's pulling the strings on the left and what their ultimate goals are. I've done several speaking engagements, and I'm looking for more. In fact, I've got one coming up on Saturday, December 5th in Washington State. If you know of any conservative clubs, Republican groups, Tea Party or 912 clubs, or anyone else that would get something out of following the dark money on the left, please email me at jeff@jeffreyreynolds.net. Search for Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy in stores or online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Simon & Schuster. It's available in hardback, Kindle, or Nook now. Check out whoownsthedems.com for more information.
All right.
right. Welcome into the podcast. My name is Jeff Reynolds. I'm your host, and I'm joined today by Will Christensen, who is the head of the University of Oregon College Republicans. And Will, welcome in.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So looks like you had a little bit of a brouhaha last night with the student senate. What was it that they were concerned about?
Well, it was a couple things related to our social media presence, apparently. So they said. A couple weeks ago, we had a member of ours have a fantastic interview over Zoom with an actual Proud Boy from Texas. And she, you know, was just trying to clear up controversies and, you know, just kind of learn more about the group and get her own take, kind of, because this is not something that the mainstream media is doing right now. Our secretary, basically who's our webmaster, social media coordinator, she thought it was a fantastic idea. She really liked one segment from it. She's like, hey, I think we should post this on our social media. And I said, go right ahead. I think that's great. And she did. And it was actually taken down by Instagram for hate speech. And we appealed
I'm not kidding.
They took it down for hate speech.
Wow. On
Instagram, not Facebook, even though it's the same company. So it's still up there. But yeah, they took it down. We appealed it. They said no. So that video is gone. And then on November 14th, we went to the Stop the Steal rally in Salem, Oregon, just a handful of our members. And, you know, I'm really pro Trump and all that. And, you know, we have some other members that are too. So we sent them up there. And I went too, and we took a picture. And in the background were two Proud Boys flags that were up on the stage. And we didn't think anything of it.
Did you even notice them? Or
I honestly didn't even notice them in the photo itself. I mean, I knew it was clear the Proud Boys were there, but we were there for Trump, not the Proud Boys. You know, I'm pretty neutral on them as an organization. But other than that, like, we took the picture, we put it on Instagram, all our social medias, and that post on Instagram now has over 2,000 comments. And it was not taken down by Instagram. There's a very wide array of comments on there, and people, you know, making threats, whatnot, saying they're going to run us out of Eugene, things like that. So this really started boiling over last Friday. And since it was the weekend, the school didn't really say anything. And then once Monday hit, they basically summoned us into a hearing. I mean, we weren't required to go, but we were sent an email, and they said that there was a resolution on condemning quote unquote white supremacy and holding student groups to a higher standard. So that was really what sparked the controversy.
Now, did they actually send you a copy of the resolution, or it sounds kind of vague?
So no, they didn't. They sent us a notice of a proposed resolution, and I asked for the actual text of the resolution, and they said, well, so our Senate committee, you know, everyone in the Senate that can vote actually has this, but since it's only a draft, we cannot send it out, they said. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'll have to take that as it is if they won't give it to me. But they passed it at the meeting, even though it literally said draft at the top of the resolution itself.
Well, that's interesting, because that may be a violation of their bylaws as far as sending out an agenda and actually setting an agenda to create a resolution that nobody gets to review ahead of time. So that's odd.
So they did send out the agenda, but they didn't send out the resolution beforehand. So I think their requirements are that you have to know the agenda, but it says in the agenda that this can change at any time. So it could literally just switch right before the meeting, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, that's having dealt with Robert's rules, that's not proper. That's not a proper way of handling an agenda. It can change at any time based on the vote of the body. That's
right.
Yeah. So in fact, it's common practice for folks who, hey, I'd like to add something to the agenda. Let's take a vote on it and move on, right?
Yeah, they do vote on, you know, approving the agenda at the beginning of the meeting, but it's more of like for the public, they can just kind of switch it up on you. And then if you say, hey, I want to move it, they're not going to move it unless you're the one that they actually want to listen to.
So what does the resolution actually say? Do you have a copy of it yet?
We did get a copy of that. I can send you a PDF over, of course.
Yes, please.
But basically, this resolution has us mentioned, and it has the UOCR, and it has the name of the girl who did the interview. which was very much uncalled for. And it says that they basically condemn our actions as a group, and they said that we were provoking white supremacy, and that it was potentially in violation of student conduct code because it would be potentially interfering with people's ability to work, which I find is a very shallow accusation and untrue. But beyond that, they are asking the ASUO executive to institute diversity trainings for all ASUO leadership as a prescription for this supposed problem.
So diversity training for what? The officers of every club, or?
It just says leaders in the actual resolution. So it's not, it's pretty vague. So I think this, it might even be able to be extended to, you know, even not ASUO recognized like leaders that are just around campus. I mean, it's very carefully written so that it can be, you know, interpreted basically in whatever way they want to.
That's okay. So what do you think they were trying to accomplish with this resolution?
I think their hands are tied much more than some of us on our side of the aisle might realize, but I think most of it was really just to virtue signal. I mean, as just like the blanket term, it was really just to say, and, you know, say like, oh, look, we did something about this, you know, look at how much, like how good of people we are, that we really stuck it to the man, you know, and that's really what this whole thing is. I mean, these people have taken the same energy from like the Occupy Wall Street movement and then just applied it everywhere else. And they just don't know when to stop.
Right. So, you know, there's the Proud Boys have been in the news quite a bit. Obviously, Joe Biden threw them out at one of the debates. Who do you want me to denounce? And he's, you know, said Proud Boys. And so, sure. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence that they are actual practicing white supremacists who are advocating for, you know, the white race to be ascendant over other races.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, their president is a black Cuban. I said in the meeting last night, if this is a white supremacist group, they're really, really bad at it, especially if they're putting all over their website under each of these chapters. They're literally putting in anti-racism now just to like clear the air on that. So it's basically like you can say whatever you want, but it'll just be used against you whenever they feel like it. And they can just say, oh, well, you were lying then, but tell the truth now by saying which I want you to say so I can feel like I have some sort of control over you.
Right. And so what do you think this, to me, the implications of this are pretty dire, because not only can they targeted one of the girls in your organization in the resolution personally, yes, by name. So now everybody knows, hey, that's that white supremacist chick. Let's go destroy her life. But they're, you know, setting all of you up for that kind of treatment. And this could have real world implications. You guys are obviously in college. You're going to get a degree. You're going to be looking at, for jobs on the job market here soon. This could really cause you trouble in the job market.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it does, then that's basically liable for a lawsuit at that point. I mean, you know, defamation, things like that require some bit of damage first. So if people are willing to, you know, cause damage like that, they should expect to show up in court. I mean, it's pretty simple like that.
Yeah. So I watched a bit of the hearing last night via live stream. It was very difficult to hear a lot of the folks, but what were some of the arguments that people were making? Obviously, you had a couple of folks from your organization show up and defend on free speech grounds the idea that you can actually talk to another human being that belongs to a group that may or may not align with your beliefs. But what was the general tone? What were some of the things that they said in opposition to you guys?
That the other side said to us?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they said at one point that basically, you know, that we have a bunch of racist dog whistles with these flags in the background, that no one can trust what we say because our actions speak louder than our words and all this. And they, we threw out things like, They said, oh, well, the FBI says that this is a dangerous group. And I said, well, we all have disagreements with the government at times. And they say, oh, well, it just sounds like you're not very pro-law enforcement anymore, like the conservative you should be. You know, basically trying to describe my own ideology to me as if they know it better. And it's, you know, frankly, I mean, insulting, but I don't take it personally. I mean, it's they're just playing, they're playing the political game and expecting us to take the bait, and I'm not going to take it.
Well, and that's a very good point, because the Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky, one of the main rules is to use the other group's rules against them. So that's exactly right out of their playbook. You know, that's out of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's playbook.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So what are the implications now? Are they going to try to defund your group? Are they going to try to sanction your group? What's going to happen here? Obviously, now they're going to threaten you with re-education and sensitivity training and that sort of thing. What else is going to come down the pike from this?
For sure. So this was technically a non-binding resolution. So it merely asks for the ASUO executive part of the full ASUO body to institute these trainings. So they can either choose to institute them or not. And how they apply that will be very interesting. If they only use it as like a punishment for like offending groups, then that could be a free speech argument, and that, you know, that could potentially go to court. But if they just say, oh, well, if you're a group leader, then you just have to take this training and this is just kind of how it is, then it goes, okay, well, there's not much you can really do there.
Equal application under the law.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So if, now, there are still groups, of course, including the College Democrats, which have been, I'll say, very friendly to us, which is a complete exaggeration, basically saying that, you know, they're saying our incidental fees should not be going to this group. It's ridiculous that we still fund them, things like that. I personally think that they're just jealous because we definitely have more members than them, but that's just
really
me. Yes,
even in Eugene, huh?
Even in Eugene. I mean, you think, and it makes sense. Like if you, they basically have like the whole campus that thinks like them. So you would only really be part of the College Democrats if you wanted like internships or things like that. But when you got to, I think one of the things that we learned from Trump is that energy wins elections. And clearly the fact that we have more members just shows that there really is more energy and it's more authentic because we're actually countering something big here.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And you saw that in the lead up to the election that there was quite a bit of, you know, you look at the rallies that Joe Biden tried to have versus the rallies that Donald Trump had. There was no comparison whatsoever.
Exactly. Yeah. If you know, he's got like six people in a rally, and you know, the typical thing quoted, he's only got, you know, he's run the whole thing from his basement, things like that. I mean, that it really is underestimated just how much that outreach really works for people. And just generally, I mean, you're not really going to win if all you can say is, okay, well, at least I'm not the other guy. You know, it's right. Not really a winning message.
Yeah, and that's the whole reason, the whole just like general feeling behind the Stop the Steal stuff, right? That there's no way there was enough enthusiasm to get 80 million votes for that guy, or just not the other guy, you know?
Exactly. More votes than Barack Obama.
Right. Yeah, by a significant margin. But, exactly. You know, he got 15 million more votes than Hillary Clinton did. You know, that just doesn't pass the smell test.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's broaden scope a little bit here. Talk to me about what it's like to be a conservative on a very liberal college campus. The University of Oregon is not known generally for its college Republicans.
For sure. Yeah. So I, you know, this is all my personal experience. So mileage may vary depending on the conservative, but going from there, I mean, personally, I have it not really faced much opposition personally until this point. There have been like little moments in classes where I took like a philosophy course, which, you know, is very prone to liberal ideas. And the professor just said, oh, well, billionaires shouldn't exist. And I was more libertarian at the time. And I was just like, I don't think you should really just be throwing that out there. I mean,
yeah, where's the line, right?
Exactly. Like this is, like you receive federal funding, you should be careful about what you say there. But I mean, other than that, it's there was a time when I was tabling for our group my freshman year, and I was wearing a MAGA hat, wasn't even my own, and this woman this girl walks by me and she just yells, F you, F you, F you, you know, saying the actual word, of course.
Yeah, sure.
And just like, just absolutely screaming. And everyone, all the other tables around us were just like shocked. They were like, not at me, but at her. And it was a very like relieving feeling because they were all just like, what was that? I mean, they didn't okay. say anything to us, but they were
so definitely like, form up a mob right there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And there's been other times, you know, I think most of the opposition that we'll ever face is really at tabling. I mean, our current tabling guy right now, there's not many people on campus, but we have been tabling right. And, you know, basically it's just like glares, you know, and like, there's a couple people who come up and just say, oh, I support what you're doing. And that's really it. And they don't really come to a meeting or anything like that. So, it's really when you're out, like literally in the public square that you really face opposition.
Right. Now, I understand Eugene's been the scene of a few riots at, you know, up here in Portland. It's been a little bit crazy for the last 7 months, but what's the riot scene down there in Eugene, and how have you been able to keep your head down with that?
Well, thankfully I live in a pretty decent spot right now. Beyond that, there was a time that I was going and visiting some family, and I was coming back down I-5, and I think I took 105, and I went basically through downtown, and if people know, it's in front of like this apartment building, the 515, and there was a riot like literally two blocks in front of me, and I could see the tear gas and everything. And I was so lucky. I just turned right on the last street, the last opportunity to get away from it. And you know, it's things like that. It's just crazy. If I hadn't, you know, if somehow I couldn't like merge over or anything, like I would have been actually stuck, and I could have gotten my car broken into and like people throw me out or anything like that. I mean, it was in that intersection that someone actually pulled a gun on a guy in a car, and he had to pull his back, you know, like that. Yeah. So that was, it's pretty tense. It gets pretty tense with the riots. I think now it's more the riots itself themselves have kind of slowed down, but there's still just been kind of constant protests. I think now coronavirus and like how prevalent it is actually now slowing down a lot of these protests, and you know, these people are actually scared of catching something that they've been saying was like the deadliest virus ever for so long.
Right. Yeah. And so all of a sudden the virus affects the riots again, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
It was throughout the summer. It didn't go in those areas, but yeah, now it's everywhere. So, all right. So, as far as the future of the club and this resolution, you're going to probably be forced to go through some sort of re-education training. Do you think this is going to hamper your activities in the future, or that it could have implications for things that you want to do on campus?
Potentially, I'd say if we didn't take it, that they would probably, you know, come down on us either with revoking funding or saying that we can't meet or something until we do this, things like that. So we are still unsure of exactly what our response will be if the trainings are actually instituted. But as far as the future of the club more generally, I think it's brighter than ever. I mean, this really like cements us honestly as like a key part of the campus culture in some sense. I mean, I know maybe journalists don't like this or anything like this, but all publicity in some sense can be good publicity within some sort of reason. And I generally think that smart and morally straight people will be drawn to our club through something like this. And, you know, the public record is out there, you know, on our, from our live stream, that we defended ourselves and they just completely railroaded us. We're very rude in the open discussion in the public forum, interrupting us, all things like that, you know, being very condescending and all that. So I think that our club has a much brighter future here. And our saying is, we have a flag for it. It's we are truly the best party of campus, and we will be best party on campus, and we will be for generations to come.
There you go. All right. So I know Donald Trump has renounced white supremacy like 39 times or something like that. And they keep asking him, do you stand there and denounce white supremacy now? And of course, he says yes. And they continue to say he never does it. So I suppose it's required that all Republicans must answer the question now. Do you renounce white supremacy?
Absolutely. Of course I do.
That was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Exactly. I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Exactly. I mean, yes. It's 2020. Who even believes this crap anymore?
Exactly. I mean, like we're still getting DMs to our account and everything like that, that are saying, oh, can you clarify your position again? Can you clarify your position?
Oh my goodness.
And it's like, at what point, you know, do you just say, it's like, you have to recognize the intention behind those remarks and why they keep asking you. There's not a genuine, like, I'm genuinely confused here. Cause if you were genuinely confused, I honestly don't see how you could be genuinely confused, because the record is very clear.
The obvious intent is to continue to raise the question so that people will continue to question your sincerity when you answer.
Of course, you know, at some point it's just like, I don't want to make you happy. Honestly, I don't want to give you the dopamine influx. You know, it's like, that's what this is. It's just, yeah, it's just a dopamine addiction. It's like, we all, you know, we're all addicted to our phones. They're addicted to asking us whether or not we're white supremacists all the time. You know, choose your flavor at this point.
Yeah, and I did see that last night during the hearing, I believe it was your treasurer that pointed out that you have actually removed members that violated community standards and standards on hate speech and that kind of thing. So you have a track record of dealing with this the way it should be dealt with.
For sure. And, you know, honestly, those people are very discouraged from coming to club in the first place. I mean, like a couple of years ago, there was a guy and he, you know, and he was publicly called out. And this guy was like, hey, by the way, this guy is basically a Nazi. And he just left. You know, it's like at that point, like, they know that they're called out. And it's like, OK, well, we don't really need to deal with this anymore because they've removed themselves. And I think that's, you know, that's much better that they've removed themselves from the equation.
Yep, there you go. All right. Well, Will Christensen, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. I have enjoyed watching you guys fight back against this false narrative, and I'm cheering you on from up north, and I hope you prevail in everything you do.
Well, thank you very much. And I just wanted to end with this. You know, we need, if you want to include the podcast or not, but we could get financial support revoked, whatever. If you would like to donate, just uocollegerepublicans.com/donate is all I need to do. All the information's there. But thanks for having me on their podcast, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I'll link your website in the show notes.
All right. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Take care.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Goodbye.
If you like this podcast, the best way you can support it is by leaving a rating and subscribing. If you really, really like it, please consider a paid sponsorship by going to anchor.fm/behindthecurtain and clicking the support button. And don't forget to buy my book, Behind the Curtain, Inside the Network of Progressive Billionaires and Their Campaign to Undermine Democracy. Now it's on to my second interview with Glenn Tate. All right, I am ready. My name is Jeff Reynolds. I'm the host of the Behind the Curtain podcast, and we're doing sort of a shared podcast with Glenn Tate of the Prepping 2.0 podcast. I've been on his podcast several times. I believe this is the first time you've been on my podcast, but I wanted to bring you on actually as we come into Tuesday, Election Day coming up, and your history as an attorney, and I don't hold that part against you, but you have quite a history as an attorney working in election issues. So why don't you, I'll give you a few minutes here to just kind of talk about your background and your experience working election cases. And then we'll go into what we can expect to see, because there's all kinds of things that have been ruled on by various states that will open up the floodgates of fraud from what I can see. So Glenn, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
You bet. You bet. Well, it all starts out, I grew up in the state of Washington, and Washingtonians used to at least fancy themselves as living in a corruption-free state. I remember when I was a kid, everyone would say, we're not Louisiana and we're not New Jersey. And there was a sanctimoniousness, I came to find out that's what it was, about Washington elections. And so imagine my shock when I am living in Southern Illinois, in East St. Louis, the suburbs.
Ooh, nice place.
It's a garden city. It's beautiful. And one of the prosecuting attorneys, a deputy prosecuting attorney, it's corrupt Democrat only town. This was 20, 30 years ago. I'm sure it's even worse now. He jokingly,
just for reference, I have a cousin that actually used to work the graveyard shift at a 7-Eleven in East St. Louis.
Funny quick story about East St. Louis. You know those signs when you roll into a town and it says like the Rotary Club meets on Wednesdays at noon at the IHOP or whatever?
Yeah.
I should have taken a picture of this. Years and years ago, the sign when you enter East St. Louis says East St. Louis Rotary Club meets at IHOP, and it had bullet holes in it. Can't make like stuff up.
The Crips meet at the Denny's. And
that's
the,
right.
The Bloods meet at Sherry's.
That's right. Did you say Grand Slam? Anyway, so imagine my shock as I believe that elections are all pristine and good and wonderful.
East St. Louis. Cheat?
Who would ever cheat? I had never, and it's funny you bring that up. That was actually my question. I thought, well, why would you do that? So I'm talking to a prosecuting attorney who's a friend of mine. We're having lunch and he's laughing. He's going, here's how you do it. Like what a dope I was for not, number one, knowing it or not knowing that this was a thing. And he proceeded to explain it. It was low tech stuff. So that was my first foray into this. And I started thinking, you know what, this is a real thing, this voter fraud thing. It's actually real. So fast forward to probably 15 years ago, I'm an assistant attorney general in the state of Washington. And I represent the Secretary of State's office. And I got to participate in a federal Voting Rights Act case. And that sounds like the state of Washington was suppressing votes and all of that other stuff. Maybe there were fire hoses involved. Maybe there were vicious dogs, things like that. No, not at all. What it was a lawsuit. And this completely opened my eyes. And I want to state, again, it was 15 years ago. And this is why that's important. That's 15 years that have elapsed that things have gotten a lot worse. So
that
this is like
affect their craft, right?
Yeah, this is like, you know, sock hops and soda fountains, you know, skirts with poodle dogs on them. It's completely like this is Andy Griffith version of voter fraud I'm about to describe. So it's only worse now. But 15 years ago, the Brennan Center, which is named after the late Justice Brennan, is funded by the Soros Foundation. A bunch of other, well, I mean, come on, this is behind the curtain. I have to tell you, like, who funds these groups? Of course, you know who funds these groups. You wrote a book about it, right? So anyway, well,
my audience may not have, not all of my audience has bought my book yet. And
what?
I know.
That's
crazy.
Dumb.
Yeah.
Listeners, please hit the pause button and go buy his book and come back to this later. But
who owns the Dems.com?
Okay, there
and
you go. Who owns the Dems.com? Anyway, so these left-wing groups bring this suit, and it was over voter registration. The highly fascistic, obviously, you know, white supremacist government of the state of Washington wanted to clean up its voter rolls. And there's a process. Oh my goodness, is there a process for doing so? I won't get into the process because who cares? It involved, here's what I remember, some examples. 53,000 off the top of my head, voter registrations that the Social Security Administration, who keeps track of who's dead because they don't want to send checks to dead people. Mm-hmm. So they, yeah. I think it's well established that the Social Security Administration keeps a really good list of who has died that year or whatever it is.
I've got another example when you're done.
Okay. And so the Social Security Administration has a database. Washington State ran its voter rolls through the database. And there are, and I'm going to gloss over the details because who cares? And quite honestly, it was 15 years ago and I kind of forgot some of this. There would be probably three checks. There would be all kinds of things put in place to make sure that people weren't just kicked off the voter rolls willy-nilly. Another key fact in this is that even 15 years ago, Washington was a vote by mail state, which is designed to commit voter fraud. It is it's designed to enable voter fraud. Mm-hmm. And it does a bang up job. And we're all going to see that later. We'll talk about that in a few minutes when we get into the sort of what's going to happen part of the show. But so there were all these checks in place to scrub these people off, and the Secretary of State asked the Department of Justice, even though Washington State isn't on the list, the list of bad Southern states, I call it that, you know, need to get pre-clearance for stuff because they had bad pasts 60 years ago and still need to keep paying some sort of penance for what they did back then. Just to be sure, Washington State asked the Department of Justice, run by the Bush administration at the time, for permission to do this. the Department of Justice said, well, of course, because you see, if there are a bunch of people that are on the voter rolls who aren't really alive and aren't really voters, that would lead to fraud. Obviously, people will vote those dead people's ballots. And
if
here's
they can get their hands on them, right?
Yeah, right. And well, they were going to the house that they used to live in, and you could have family members. So when people commit voter fraud, you're diluting the votes of real voters. I no longer have a vote. If 10% of the votes are fraudulent, making that number up, I only have 9/10 of a vote. Mm-hmm. And so that's why this is a big deal, besides the accountability part and the political part, just the legal constitutional part. Mm-hmm. I'm being fractionally disenfranchised.
And I'm told turning fraud. People into fractions is one of the founding mistakes of the
it is.
United States. Yeah,
it is. Oh, I see where you're going. I mm-hmm. see that. Oh, I get yeah. that. So yeah. So, there was this voter fraud. So the Department of Justice said, not only can you do this, we want you to do this because we don't want fractional disenfranchisement, a phrase I just made up.
I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And yeah. I've had a couple rock stars. I'm feeling really, I'm flowing right now.
Oh, yeah, you had to fight traffic to get to the studio.
Oh, it was
yeah.
terrible. It was yeah. terrible. So the Department of Justice said, yes, we approve it. And oh, by the way, this is the very same protocol, computer database, blah, 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 nerd stuff that Maryland did. And we approved Maryland. So Maryland and Washington State can both do this. We thought, oh, we're golden. Yeah. What could go wrong? Mm-hmm. The Brennan Center or whatever their communist name is, filed a lawsuit. And we all kind of laughed. We're like, I'm pretty sure DOJ said we can do this. So whatever, Brennan Center. We go to court and we lose. And it was because with all the protocols in place for the scrubbing of dead people, there were other things. People need to understand this. Getting taken off a voter registration list is virtually impossible. And you have all kinds of appeals. All you had to do was show up at the polling place, or I guess they still had a few of them back then, with a utility bill, mm-hmm. with your name and the address. And there are all kinds of examples of things. It's impossible as a practical matter to be a real person actually entitled to vote. We'll get into the felon stuff later, maybe, actually entitled to vote and not be able to vote. There are 99 checks and balances in place in favor of voting. So
never mind how easy it is to get a state issued ID.
Exactly. So that was the voter registration case we lost. And I'll say something, I hope this isn't inappropriate. I don't think it is, but we'll find out, right?
I guess we will.
Our judge was named Ricardo Martinez. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about him, never heard anything bad about him. One of the Brennan Center's arguments was that when, and I'll say ethnic names are spelled, they can be spelled incorrectly, or there's sort of a difference in translation or something. I know with Russian names, for example, there are different ways in the Roman alphabet of translating a Cyrillic character. So name mismatch was the big thing. Mm-hmm. And I actually made this mistake. So I might be the reason Washington is rife with voter fraud. It might actually be my mistake because
on
the cover of the lawsuit, you always put the judge's name, right? Mm-hmm. I misspelled Ricardo Martinez. The Brennan wow. Center's argument, among others, were, hey, look, name mismatch is such a problem. These clowns at the state of Washington misspelled the judge's name, and it's a Hispanic name. Oh, look, their system is rife with kicking Hispanic names off the voter rolls. There's that. The other thing I got to experience, and this was from a peripheral, very indirect viewpoint, so I don't want to claim I have firsthand knowledge of the following. And that was the Dino Rossi situation in Washington State. Nobody cares about Washington State in 2004, so I'll just say this. 3.5 million votes cast. It came down to a difference of 124 votes. The way it was described to me is if this were a football field, a 100-yard football field, the difference was a quarter of an inch. That's
right.
That's a great way of viewing it.
They basically kept counting the votes until they got enough Democrats to put, was it Gregoire at the time over the
Gregoire.
Edge?
Gregoire. Yeah. They counted three times.
Yep.
And every time the Democrats kept coming up with more. Here's what we know from things like affidavits that were filed in the case. So this isn't some guy told me or some wives' tale. This is adjudicated fact. King County, which is a notorious hornet's nest of communism, handed out.
That's where Seattle is. They actually have communists on the city council.
Yeah. So not making it up.
No, it's Kishana Stewart. Yeah.
So 10,000 unserialized ballots. Not that they're really serialized, but there are ways of keeping track of them minimally. But there were no, these were blank. These were unserialized ballots handed out to various unions. Because the union said they would go out and make sure that everybody got their votes back in. And it was that obvious, that sort of just naked fraud.
That's ballot. So the blank ballots is one thing, but even the ballot harvesting is another issue entirely. And SEIU has been doing that for decades.
Yeah. And SEIU is a problem, America. You're going to find that out really soon in the next few days. So It was maddening because the courts didn't care. The courts thought that they could not order another election. Nobody cared. You proved all these felons. I forget the number. 750 comes to mind. Wow. 750 felons voted. And all the Rossi campaign wanted was for those votes to not count. The Democrats in that case had the nerve, the gumption, to actually argue that felons vote predominantly Republican.
Because they're so in favor of law and order.
So a judge said, gee golly, I don't know what I can do about this. It's not like I can have a new election or anything. So Gregoire, after three counts, ended up winning and served 8 years, and it was a terrible train wreck. So I take us back to the beginning of this conversation where I think that elections are full of unicorns and magic and rainbows. And then I see stuff like this, and it's filthy and it's awful. And so I wanted to give a little bit of detail about some of these cases I've worked on or witnessed from afar in the Rossi case to let everybody know this does happen. Mm-hmm. And the way it happens, we've listed the fact of the voter registration and all kinds of dead people. We keep seeing newspaper stories. You know, somebody says 13 ballots came to this address I'm at. By the way,
we audited this stuff in Oregon. There was a yoga studio that had 14 registered voters at it. There are homeless shelters with over 700 registered voters. You know, I mean. I
worked on one of those cases peripherally. It was not a voter rights case, but it involved that evidence. And at a Tacoma, Washington homeless shelter, there were 130, I want to say, folks that were registered. And some of the names of the registrants were Joe Montana, the famous quarterback.
Apparently, he's living at a homeless shelter. Must have really hit hard times.
Yeah. And Fruto Boy, that was another one. Fruto Boy.
I think I know him.
Yeah, he's great. I love that guy.
Yeah.
And there, it was just obvious what it was. Acorn, which was an arm of SEIU that has now been shut down because it was prosecuted in 2004 and 2006 federally. A bunch of Acorn people went to jail in the federal system when George Bush was the president. Nobody went to jail in the state system. Because apparently proving somebody is harvesting fake ballots, registering people fraudulently, that doesn't matter in the state of Washington. I suspect that's the case.
It doesn't matter that Dino Rossi ran again for governor and got screwed again with voter fraud. So this happens all the time. It happened in Oregon in 2010 with Chris Dudley when John Kitzhaber came back after a few terms off to run for his third term. We all went to bed with knowing that Chris Dudley was ahead by 20,000 votes on election night. We woke up and 40,000 ballots had magically appeared from Multnomah County. And all of a sudden, John Kitzhaber, all 40,000 of them happened to vote for John Kitzhaber, and he won by 20,000 votes. Crazy.
just like they knew the amount they needed. Oh, another story back to East St. Louis. It's the 1994 election. Obviously, it's a big sweep for Republicans. In East St. Louis, the precincts in East St. Louis, the votes didn't come in. They were late. They weren't there. And it was a huge Republican groundswell, even in St. Clair County, Illinois. And the Democrats were going to lose by whatever it was, 5,000 votes. So weird. Like 5,500 votes came in from East St. Louis. And there were 5,000 plus for the Democrats. Just crazy how that
happened. I seem to recall in 2008, Philadelphia had something like, some of the precincts had 110% of their ballots turned in, 100% for Barack Obama, something like that. Yeah,
This is all documented. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of the ways that the Democrats, I should pause and say, I am unaware of Republican voter fraud like this.
Trying hard enough.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, yeah, try harder. It could exist. I'm not saying it isn't, but I don't know of any. So that's how they do it. It starts with fraudulent registrations. Obviously, a registration is a ticket to vote, and that's a ticket to commit voter fraud if you want to commit fraud. So it starts with registering people that don't exist, that are dead, that are not U.S. citizens. You can, in many states, take your Mexican consulate ID card and get a state ID card, which I can't even believe that's legal, but it is indeed the case. There's motor voter. We have all kinds of like undercover. I think Project Veritas did something with this where people were, I guess, coming to America. They were in America. They were getting their driver's licenses. They were getting signed up for welfare. And in a lot of cases, you can tell from the translate, they didn't fully even understand what was going on. And it's like, here's your voter and Democrat, right? And they were like, they don't know what they're saying.
What the hell?
Yeah, saltwater aquarium fish. It's like, okay. And so, and we've seen them being guided to register as Democrats and all these other things. So we know that's it. So then there's the other level is that you've got to have people who are going to take these registrations. Again, a ticket to commit voter fraud and are actually going to do it, which would be done a variety of ways, filling out the ballots fraudulently, mailing them back in. Again, vote by mail is just, it's designed to commit voter fraud.
Well, when you're not in person at a polling station with a polling worker watching, I mean, obviously the booth is private, or at least that's what I hear. I've never actually voted in a voting booth because I've always voted by mail in Oregon. You've got the pressure of being there in person with you know, the implication that you're being watched and somebody's going to, you know, at least, you know, you get that feeling on the back of your neck, right? That, you know, you're under scrutiny.
Right. And the election polling workers can notice if somebody walks in six times and votes.
Well, that could, yeah.
And it's harder too to commit voter fraud at a voting booth because you have to walk in and say, I am, you know, Glenn Tate, 123 Elm Street and all that other stuff. You have to know the fraudulent person's name and address and all these other things to be able to get the ballot. So there's
another
check.
And go into the right precinct and the right county and all that stuff. And, you know,
so
vote by mail. You can just do that from your kitchen table. It doesn't matter where you are.
Exactly. Vote by mail also has the inherent problem of the Postal Service. We've seen all kinds of things where those, you know, votes out of conservative areas end up in trash cans. I mean, that's too easy.
Oh, by the way, the Postal Workers Union endorsed Joe Biden as if there's no conflict of interest there.
Exactly. I think it's neat, by the way, that so many people, including me, didn't trust their ballots to the Postal Service this time and went and dropped them off in the little boxes that we have to put them in if we're not going to mail them in. I have to say, in my little town, the postal folks are awesome, and I don't think they're doing that, but nationally, it's a huge, huge problem.
Right, so, and nobody wants to acknowledge it.
So you've got, and we're just scratching the surface here of the ways to commit voter fraud. It reminds me of that conversation with that prosecutor in East St. Louis. So you've got the mail problem, and then you've got the Postal Service problem where they're grabbing these things. there's more mischief. There is keeping the polls open late. Mm-hmm. We see that every cycle, and it's always been one or two places, and you kind of go, wow, that's crazy. Glad that didn't happen in my town. But there would be allegations on election day that the doors were locked. Nobody had the key, COVID, Bull Connor, dogs, water cannons. There were the Rotary Club militia was out, and they were the Kiwanis Club militia too, and they were deterring people from voting for Democrats. And so sometimes you'll see federal judges, usually federal judges, saying the polling place can stay open till midnight. Once in a while, I mean, it's all hokey and it's all goofy, and it doesn't bug me because it doesn't change things. That could change things this year. Oh, but why would you even wait till midnight when in several states, Pennsylvania comes to mind, and Wisconsin or Michigan, I've lost track. There have been so many. They're going to accept mail-in ballots days after the election.
Right.
No postmark necessary.
I think it was Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets worse. Mail-in ballots, I used to lobby, I would sit there in legislative testimony. There'd be some other bill that wasn't mine that was going on about voting stuff. And I'd listen to this, and the proponents of mail-in voting would say things like, well, there's a safeguard. I mean, you have to have a signature on it, right? And the election workers, they pull it up on a screen. I've seen them do this. I've been a poll watcher, right? Mm-hmm. They pull it up on the screen. And it's pretty cool. And even 15 years ago, it was pretty cool. And you see these two signatures and you're like, yep, that makes sense. Not in Pennsylvania, not in South Carolina.
Yeah. This year, the federal, or it was actually the state Supreme Court's ruled that they could submit, they don't have to match the signatures on the mail-in ballots.
I can't understand how the one last safeguard to sort of kind of knowing if a person who had registered in the past, who may be dead now, who may have moved. People move and they vote at their old stuff. They get mail forwarded, blah, blah, blah. Again, we're just scratching the surface.
Sure.
The one way of pretty much, but kind of sort of knowing if that registered person voted is tossed out the window. The Democrats have an army of lawyers. They have tens of thousands of volunteers.
That's been my contention, is I thought that Trump would win convincingly, or not convincingly, but comfortably. And I still think that's the case, even with all the voter fraud. But the only fear that I have is whether or not he's got enough lawyers to fight against the fleet of lawyers that Joe Biden has.
And the many, many battlefronts, the presumably thousands of battlefronts. This precinct in Wisconsin, hey, we need to have these 890 votes counted this way. And then you're off in Glendale, Arizona, and then you're off in Bangor, Maine. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard logistically to do. And of course, the D's have all kinds of volunteers who are really paid. You've got the union folks, you got the National Lawyers Guild, Soros money, funding, these legal fights. We keep coming back to that.
I'm sure there are other founders.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there are other, you know, Tides Foundation, a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a big problem, because all these voter fraud awakenings that I had, right, in East St. Louis and seeing the Rossi thing and seeing the federal case, the awakenings that I had, and it's not enough to know in your head that there's voter fraud, to read a Wall Street Journal. What was that guy's name? Like Fund?
Oh, yeah, John Fund.
John Fund would write about this, and I would read it, and I'd go, yeah, so intellectually, I knew, oh, yeah, there's voter fraud. But when you experience it and you see people stealing an election and laughing about it, mm-hmm. and judges not doing anything about it, mm-hmm. it changes you. And it has changed me. And you can see how I view elections now. And I think America is going to get that wake-up call. America is going to say, I can't believe what they just did. And it'll be interesting to see the election. So they'll try. Now, whether Trump wins, there's always, as your political guy, you know this phrase, the margin of cheating. So they're mm-hmm. like in a poll, there's a margin of error. There's a margin of cheating.
I think they coined that phrase in Portland.
Yeah, they must have. So if Trump wins beyond the margin of cheating, not as much of an issue. Yeah, they'll still try, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. If it's close, they'll cheat. It may or may not work. It didn't work with the 2000 election because the U.S. Supreme Court got involved, and factually, there was like Florida was one state that, so there's a million variations of all of this, but they'll try. It'll be close, and we're all going to learn, kind of like Glenn did, we're all going to learn about voter fraud and how it's committed. And this should really make conservatives furious. Your country that you've always assumed would just kind of cruise along and be cool because we get a vote, right? High school civics level of understanding and appreciation.
My voice, my vote.
Exactly. Not even close.
Yep.
When dead people are voting multiple times. Postal workers are throwing ballots out.
And this isn't anecdotal stuff.
No, it's headlines.
Yeah, no, it's not just little things here and there. It's happening all across the country.
Absolutely, and it's systemic. And here's the thing that people don't appreciate, I think, unless they've lived this or thought about it. I know you've thought about it, and now you lived it with the Kitzhaber thing. It only takes a few votes. It only takes teeny little percentages. This country, roughly speaking, is already at a 50-50 split. It just takes a little teeny bit. Republicans don't, I think, do this. If they do, they probably do it poorly. I mean,
yeah, that's just like Republicans do. Yeah, they don't organize very well.
They hate governing. I mean, I was involved on a transition team at the state level with a Republican and statewide office holder, and there was a political team. And I remember how hard it was to get people who were conservative to even be in government. Even I was like, 2 years, come on, just like get us just through the midterms, just 2 years, come on. Mm-hmm. Nobody would do it. But that's a whole different topic, and that's not germane to today's topic. So all the things I've seen, mesh perfectly with the headlines, all the things that the listeners out there, viewers conceivably, out there have heard about. It all happens. It's real. It really happens.
And it's gotten worse since, at least in the time that I've been involved in politics over the last decade.
I have to imagine so. Yeah. I mean, I haven't kept up with it recently, so you would be able to speak more on that.
Well, so let me ask you this. What do you think the hot spots are that are going to determine who wins the election this year? Because to me, I'm looking at Pennsylvania without the signature match on the mail-in ballots. I'm looking at Michigan, like you said, and South Carolina to a lesser extent, because there's no way South Carolina is not going to go decisively for Trump. But, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, a lot of these states where, you know, Trump is trending up in the polls and probably has a really good shot at taking them, but they're going to be, you know, a lot more marginal than they were Texas.
I would add Florida in there. One of the things that people don't realize, they probably do after the Bush v. Gore thing in 2000. A lot of people just assumed elections were like there's like a national elections department. No. Obviously, nope. There are 50 secretaries of state, mm-hmm. and there are dozens of county election officials. And that's where the mischief is. Take Florida. We all saw it in 2000. You got Broward County, and then you've got the counties in the north. And
Broward County really ought to just be nuked.
Yeah. No, it's a terrible place. So it is full of variations. It is full of nuance. It is full of exceptions. It's really, really hard to have any kind of uniformity. I forgot one other thing that I'd like to add in, one other overlay to the, I was about to say a bad word. I don't know if I can say a bad word. The fecal sandwich that I think we're all going to have to be taking a bite out of here is foreign meddling.
Now, oh my, yes.
Is it going to happen? Listen, I would. I mean, if I were the Russians or the Chinese or anybody that has the ability to do it, I would. Why wouldn't you try to mess up your enemy's election? There have been some elections in Russia that had some weird stuff going on, and I imagine the folks in Langley, Virginia, had something to do with it. I kind of expect it. So I don't know if the Russians really have a favorite. I would think they would want Biden to win because they'd like a complete.
No, China has a favorite.
Yeah, that's right. Their guy, their employee, the chairman, guy. The big guy. But even if it isn't an ideological thing, and I don't think it is, because I think China and Russia and North Korea are essentially more like the mafia. They're run like crime syndicates more than like countries. But anyway, it's not ideological. They want to sow the seeds of dissension. They want us to be shooting each other in the days after the election, the weeks, the months after the election, leading up to the inauguration.
Which could very well happen.
Could very well happen. As you know, I mean, you've been on Prepping 2.0, you know that that's something we talk about, and we have experts come on, Green Berets and SEALs and all kinds of people, intelligence agency folks who know stuff. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them, and I never get agreement on these guys, like on anything, every single one of them think it's a problem. They want to sow the seeds of dissension. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't be angry at the Democrats for trying to demonstrably, visibly, objectively trying to steal the election just because the Russians want us mad at each other? No, be mad. Be really, really mad at the Democrats for what they're about to do, what you're about to catch them doing. And just because the Russians want you mad, stay mad. Get madder. I don't care. So the foreign stuff, now there's a couple ways that happens. Obviously it could be disinformation. It doesn't have to be as like James Bond, rest in peace, Sean Connery, yeah, today, absolutely. By the way.
Pour one out for my homie.
That's right. That's right. It doesn't have to be, you know, giant hacking of voting machines. Although that's super easy to do, I'm told.
It is super easy to do. And I want to talk about this.
Yeah. It could just be regular old disinformation. It could be hacking the Los Angeles, I'm making all this up, Los Angeles Times website or Twitter account, and they send out something saying somebody won or somebody lost.
Everybody goes home and doesn't vote.
Yeah, so there's that. Yeah. But yeah, the hacking thing, I remember, again, legislative testimony when I was a lobbyist and waiting for my bill to come up and listening to other stuff. It's so funny to think back to it now, the early 2000s. Yeah. And somebody said the voting machine lobby was there saying, hey, you know, let's have this all online. Let's not have a paper backup, all these crazy, crazy things. And
was it backed by Harry Reid?
I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember one of the lobbyists for the voting machine people was a friend of mine. And I was like, I'm really sorry, but I can't support this. And so they would say, the reason I bring it up was the idea in 2003 that there would be hacking of voting machines was like cuckoo talk. It was,
yeah. Why would anybody do that? Yeah.
Why would anybody do that? I mean, you know, the difference between the parties isn't that great. We can live together. So the Democrats win, my taxes go up. It's not like people are going to try to take away my guns. So anyway, there's that. So you wanted to talk about the hacking part.
Yeah. So I wrote a white paper for True the Vote a couple of years ago, and I was researching whether or not blockchain would be a good mm-hmm. alternative, a more secure alternative for electronic voting. And I won't go into the details, but some of the stuff that came up, like there was a Princeton undergraduate, I think it was a math class or math professor that had his class hack into voting machines, and they hacked into it and rebuilt it and put it back together like in the time of the class. So it's not that hard to do. The other thing that I remember is Behar County, where San Antonio, Texas is. So the last time that voting machines were really upgraded was after Florida, 2001, 2002, they had the HAVA Act, Help America Vote Act, and they put in a whole bunch of money into all these counties to upgrade all of their computer systems, which was 19 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so
computers haven't changed much, luckily.
No, well, here's how one changed. It's that this guy, this was as of 2017, this guy was the head of the elections committee in Behar County was still using zip drives. You remember zip drives?
Oh my Lord.
The big old cartridge, like it looked like an Atari cartridge you plug in. They obviously haven't made those in 15 years, but he still had to use it because that's all the software would recognize. And so he had to go out on Craigslist to find replacement parts for his election system. It was still using zip drives.
Some mailed in from Russia. Here are the zip drives for your voting machine, comrade.
Wink, wink. Yeah. You know, we did this observing here in Multnomah County in Portland, and one of our computer experts was hounding them for years because none of their USB ports were secured on their counting machines.
So you could walk by with a thumb drive
and
take stuff off, put stuff on.
Nobody'd be the wiser. Yep.
Oh my goodness. And be like, oh yeah, I have a clipboard. I'm a technician. I'm with the band.
Here's my clipboard.
Yeah. The power of the clipboard.
Yes, that's right.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So they're layers, right? I mean, look at in this short conversation we've had, how many layers we've identified, how many weaknesses that if you just had one of those weaknesses and you had people who had an incentive and weren't afraid to commit voter fraud, Democrats have an incentive to commit voter fraud and they're not afraid because nothing's going to happen to them.
Or union members, they're getting paid to do this stuff. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't even talked about how, you know, with COVID, everybody wants to do vote by mail now and absentee ballots and all this stuff. And so you're going to see a huge increase in that. And none of the states that have never done vote by mail before have any sort of infrastructure set up to be able to handle that kind of volume, never mind the Postal Service.
Yeah, and without geeking out on details, the infrastructure involved, and you've been a poll watcher, you've probably watched the tabulation too. These machines, the way they count the paper things with the little optical, the little thing you fill in, the little
OCR,
bubble thing.
Yeah.
It is not a simple process, and there are all kinds of stacks of ballots and everything. A lot of places, the one I observed, it was pretty squared away, and you could tell that, you know, it was being taken seriously. But in the chaos and the sheer number of ballots, paper ballots, from voting by mail, the ability to slip things in or throw things out, that's usually actually what's more common, is throwing stuff out than it is slipping things in. Yeah, the signature thing. Oh, and the signature thing, I didn't mention this. This is another thing a lot of Americans are going to wake up to next week and be mad about, and that is this. The vote by mail, so awesome, right? The signatures, you get a lot of mismatches. You know why? Because, and I'm this way, maybe you are too, probably a lot of listeners, I sign stuff one way when it's important with my full legal name and all my initials and stuff. And when it's a receipt at a restaurant, I have like this little thing that's the different. So there will be, because of the mail-in stuff, because you're not going to a polling place and showing ID and it's really you, and then that's a vote and that's going to count and we know that it's you. No. There are going to be all kinds of stories about signature mismatches and 20,000 votes getting thrown out here, probably where the Kiwanis guys live. And right. And all this kind of stuff. And people are going to go, my vote may not have counted. I thought this vote by mail thing was going to make everything more awesome. So you simultaneously, if you're corrupt and you want to do this and you're not afraid of getting caught, you can count votes that really aren't votes with the stuff I was mentioning about, you know, you get corrupt election officials and they say, oh, these signatures match, when they don't. And you can throw out votes that are legitimate just as easy. The bottom line, whether you're adding to one side's total or lowering another side's total, bottom line is Americans are going to realize we have no idea who really won unless the margins are huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to be.
Right.
We're going to have no idea who really won. And then the political, and I don't mean like partisan politics, I mean like people shooting each other kind of politics, the political implication of just about everybody in this country saying, we don't know who won. We don't know who the president is.
Our vote really didn't actually count. I saw a funny quote about that the other day. If it was really that important, they wouldn't let us do it.
They wouldn't let us do it. Yeah, if voting really mattered, they'd make it illegal.
Yeah,
George Carlin line, classic. But yes, so you're going to have the two president scenario conceivably. We had a friend of mine. I've never been in the military, but he's a Green Beret. So when I say my Green Beret friend, I'm not trying to imply I'm a Green Beret. Green Beret friend on, and he talked about this probably a year and a half ago. And he said, every country I've been in where there's been a two president scenario, it hasn't gone well. So
no.
There's a huge, huge problem. And what do you do? Even if there's some kind of consensus in some way about who actually won, first of all, the other 45%, let's say, are going to say, that's not my president. And they're
what they've been doing for the last 4 years. Yeah.
They might be right, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if Biden wins, 45% of the country like us will say, and there was all this voter fraud that we've talked about, we'll be like, that is not even remotely a real election. So you've got the problem of people, this is when things get violent. This is when economies crash and you got people sick and locked in their place and they got no toilet paper. We've heard your story about driving around with looking for the toilet paper, but you're going to have disruptions in supply. So forget about all that, although that's huge, just purely political. Going forward, the side that, quote, wins is going to have no political capital, is going to have no legitimacy, is going to have no standing, and it's going to make it impossible to govern.
Well, right. And on top of that, you've got Joe Biden, who may not make it through his first month as president if he somehow cheats his way into there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already infirm and incapable of doing the job, and it's getting worse by the day as you look at his public appearances. So how would, if they cheated their way into getting Joe Biden into the White House, I mean, and then, you know, a month in, Kamala Harris has to take over, that's the most illegitimate administration in U.S. history.
Absolutely. And that's a problem. We're already so fractured geographically and culturally, really, but culture and geography overlap in mm-hmm. this situation. We're so divided. I can't see this turning out smoothly. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but there's just no way this is like, I don't know, I'm making this up. I don't know, 1984 election, and everyone's like, well, you're of a different party, but let's get along and...
Well, the Democrats kind of didn't have a choice in 1984 because Walter Mondale only won Minnesota.
So. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess, and this isn't conjecture or hyperbole. And you can fill in a lot of details on this. I'm going to put you on the spot, but let's look at all of the statements from Democrats like Hillary Clinton saying Biden – Under no circumstances
should you
concede.
Yeah.
We had Nancy Pelosi. I've not seen the statement. There could be context I'm missing, so I'm open to that. But Nancy Pelosi saying words to the effect of no matter who wins, Biden is going to be inaugurated in January.
Did she say that?
And I don't know the context. I need to be fair to her.
Look that up because I you'd think
about
that would be bigger news.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
No matter who went. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. This is problematic. And the other thing is once this happens, and I'll hearken back to this gubernatorial race in Washington that nobody remembers or really cares about, but I can tell you this, it hardens you. And going forward, you view politics with anger because you got ripped off. Me personally, you know, I was going to be in the Rossi administration, right? Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's a little more personal because of that. But even still,
you know, you just kind of like, if I lost fair and square, I accept the results and I move on with my life. Mm-hmm. If I got cheated out of it, then the system is corrupt. And who's going to trust the system anymore?
And people, and these are not political people. These are average people who don't think about politics. Those few people who don't listen to your podcast, but
I haven't reached yet.
That's right. They're going to say things like, so this election was a fraud. I'd always been told that this was fair and square and it's obvious that this was cheating. And I've always been told that coups don't happen in the United States. They only happen in other countries. Here's the danger. People saying this, what else have I been told that's not true? Mm-hmm. And then their imagination starts to run wild. Mm-hmm. Oh, so Federal Reserve notes, I should just trust that there's value to them. Oh, the FDIC is going to insure my account, but they only have $30 billion to insure like $3 trillion worth of deposits. What else isn't true? And then all of a sudden, the acceleration on the disintegration in the sense of things not being integrated, the disintegration of the country gets...
And that turns into people not trusting their neighbors, not trusting people in the other party. And then you've got one half going against the other half, and now you got big problems.
Exactly. So that is the problem. I see voter fraud as an absolute certainty. It's already started. We've already seen the headlines.
Oh, sure. Yeah. 29,000 votes in Pennsylvania disappeared. They were military overseas votes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another thing. Yes, military things. The military votes in Washington State, that's a big deal. Huge percentage of the state relative to other states. Military votes. Yeah, those didn't get mailed out. Out in time and all kinds of other stuff. We all know
that those are 75%
Republican.
Okay. Let's pause just a second here and go back to what you were saying about military votes in Washington State.
I was saying that in Washington State, we have a lot of military bases. A relatively high portion of the state's population, the voting population, is in the military, and at the time, in the 2000s, was overseas, deployed. And military votes would routinely be mailed out too late. They wouldn't come in on time. See, that's when the Democrats would have a really strict thing about postmarking, right? Oh, it's not postmarked for military votes, right? Oh, geez. But if it's Frito Boy and Joe Montana, the former quarterback of the 49ers and
the Kansas City Chiefs,
Super I knew Bowl you champion, would know that. Kansas I knew you'd know that because you're a San Diego fan.
That's right.
And you're used to Kansas City beating San Diego. No, I'm sorry. That's terrible.
No, I'm not AFC used West. To that at all.
AFC West. Anyway. But so there's going to be all kinds of stuff. People are going to be mad. And not to be obnoxious, I'm going to say this. You heard it here first. I mean, you did. I mean, and in the alternative conservative media world where this is being brought up, Neener told you so. Timestamp this. It's being recorded on Halloween 2020.
Yep.
If this stuff doesn't happen, then Jeff Reynolds and Glenn Tate are big fat liars.
Well, we're not right wing nut jobs who went over off the deep end.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But I will say that you've interviewed Michael Yon. I've interviewed him a couple of times and put him up on PJ Media as well. So and I can tell you at PJ Media we're looking around at this thinking this ain't good, you know? I mean, and that's not a mainstream outlet, but it's a nationally known conservative outlet, you know?
Yeah, and another aspect to all of this is when you've got all this fraud and conceivably violence and turmoil and tumult going on, our foreign governments will try to affect this, but that's kind of hard to imagine, so forget about that for a moment. Let's just focus on domestic stuff. As you know, probably better than anybody on the planet, the left has a ton of money at stake, invested, tied up in toppling the republic.
Yes.
I'm not being hyperbolic. I mean, it is, I'm not being rhetorical. It is indeed what they want to do. Absolutely. We know this. Here's the point. If all this chaos is going on in November and December and maybe January, and you had a multi-billion dollar operation centered on toppling this government, why wouldn't you do it now? Any bullet that the bad guys have in the chamber is going to get fired now, because there's never going to be a better chance. There's never going to be a better chance. An analogy to this, it's imperfect, is during the Balkan War, the Secretary of State under Clinton, Madeleine Albright, who was a train wreck, said, when she was being told we couldn't use the military to go save Albanians and things like that, she said, we have this fantastic military. Why can't we use it? What good is a military if you can't go use it? The analogy is to the D's, what good is this subversion, insurgency, revolution machine that we've built up if we can't use it? Now's our time. How does George Soros say, no, guys, let's wait till 2024? There's no waiting.
No. But it's also, it's been constantly building for 25 years. It's been constantly expanding, and they've used that money constantly throughout. Whereas we on the right don't coordinate our money and don't apply equal but opposite pressure. And so in off cycles and when it's not election season, they're still spending their money and trying to push and push and push. And so even if they push real hard now and it doesn't go the way they want to, it's not like they're going to stop.
Right. No, they'll stop when they're incarcerated. And I'm serious.
I don't know if they would stop at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, possible. I mean, when enough of them are incarcerated.
Right. Right.
Which isn't going to happen.
No, it's not. That's unfortunate.
But. Exactly.
All yeah. right. So we've painted quite a rosy picture for Tuesday evening, haven't we?
We sure have.
And we were going to go half an hour, and now we've gone an hour. So
it always happens.
Yep. Yeah. So good talk. I'm looking at Pennsylvania. I'm looking at North Carolina. I'm looking at Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota. And Virginia possibly as well, because Virginia looks like it's going to go blue, but you know, they may try to ensure that Virginia stays blue with any means necessary. You know, I got a friend in California who moved away from Portland 2 years ago, 3 years ago, actually. And she called the Secretary of State's office to tell them, I registered to vote in California. Please remove me from the voting rolls. Mm-hmm. And she just received a ballot at her, you know, forwarded in the mail to her new place in California.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, why not?
Yeah, what the hell? And we got all these extra ballots laying around. We might as well send them out.
Exactly. What good are ballots if you can't use them?
Exactly. So yeah, I think we're in for, because of all the things you've described and your experience in dealing with election law, this is not going to be decided on Tuesday evening or the following Tuesday or 3 weeks afterwards or December 4th, you know?
No, I think, what is it, December 6th is when the House... I don't know, certifies electors, or governors have to certify electors under a federal statute.
Right.
That might be when we finally know, because of course there'll be all the litigation and the voter fraud that leads up to the question in each state of who won, and then the certification on December 6th off the top of my head. So that might be when it starts to firm up, and then there's still litigation that can occur between December 6th and inauguration day, January 21st off the top of my head.
20th.
Yeah. 20th. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And, and everybody's going to be angry and at each other's throats, in the meantime, because they've been committing a coup, yes, behind the scenes and on the nightly news, since before Trump even won the nomination.
And here's what's changed. Yes, you're exactly right. Here's what's changed. There are consequences, and it impacts people. And here's what I mean by that. The economy, the lockdowns, all this insane, you know, shutting down small businesses and all this stuff everybody knows about. It matters now. So you're like a regular old Republican, and you've always been sort of miffed at voter fraud. But I mean, it's not like it really matters. Well, now the Democrat dirtbag governor that wins in your state. By the way, all this voter fraud applies to downstate ballot stuff too.
Oh, more so, yeah. We had a state senator won by 127 votes several cycles back after they found, and they certified the election, and they found a box of ballots in a lake somewhere after the fact.
So now it matters, because looking at that example, let's say in your state, and you're a small business owner in your state, through obvious voter fraud, a Democrat either stays in office or wins an open seat or whatever it is. You've got Democrat rule because of voter fraud. And it's not just, I'm sort of miffed because golly gee, that's not fair. Now it's, oh, so I was going to reopen my restaurant. Now I can't. And right, that anger, when people's livelihood is being goofed with, I think we're going to see food disruptions. I'm not going to say the shelves are bare. I'm not a, you know, drama queen or anything like that, but, there are going to be disruptions when you start messing with food and people's livelihoods, stuff gets real. Mm-hmm. And people are going to very easily, regular, normal people that have never been mad about politics before, they're going to see the clear connection between the voter fraud and the actions of Democrats that are making their lives worse or taking away their livelihood. When all these people that are on these rent freezes, by the way, the rent didn't go away. You just didn't have to pay it. It's still due.
No,
when
right.
That starts.
Yeah,
all the eviction
moratorium and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
So when the economy is verifiably in shambles after the election, and I get Trump, it made a lot of sense to not crater the economy right before election, so I can't really fault him. I guess that makes me unprincipled. Don't really care. Glenn Tate's not my real name, so I don't really care what people think about Glenn Tate. So then it's going to start to matter, and that's where stuff's going to get real. And I don't know what that means. All it takes is a handful of people or lone wolves to go out and, you know, you can shoot out insulators on electrical lines and all of a sudden Portland doesn't have any electricity for 2 days. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. All it takes is a handful of people on the right, candidly, snapping. We know the left is going to do its stuff. And you can have severe disruptions and crazy drama going on. And the thing it takes to get only a handful of people to snap is their business gets destroyed because voter fraud means a left-wing governor stays in power and then locks down the economy. This right. could happen. This is not crazy talk.
Right. And I think the duration of the lockdowns is directly related to whether it's Biden or Trump that wins the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, it's going to be a hot winter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Should be a lot of fun. all right, Glenn Tate, we'll wrap it up here at exactly 1 hour, but, I want to say thank you again for coming on the show, the Behind the Curtain podcast, and, we'll be simulcast as a Patreon, bonus segment of the Prepping 2.0 podcast, which is going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Give a shout to all of your channels. You've got Patreon, Parler, MeWe, Facebook, not Facebook anymore, Twitter. Here we go. A website, you know.
That's right. The central location for information about the show. I do the show with my wife, Shelby Gallagher, by the way, a mm-hmm. Portland former resident.
A good friend of mine.
Yes, Prepping 2.0 is the name of the show, and the website is prepping2-0.com. That's where you can find it all, prepping2-0.com. We are on Parler at prepping2, the word .0. You know what? I probably won't even list them all off. prepping2-0.com is the place to look at it. We have a syndicated radio show heard in quite a few Western states, and then we have the regular podcast, which you can listen to online and iTunes and blah, blah, blah. Again, it's all at prepping2-0.com. And then we have a Patreon channel. Information on that is on the website. And then, as you alluded to, this is going to be one of the very first video bonus shows for our Patreon supporters at the $5 a month and up level. And we're going to just throw out videos like this. We're going to make some our own. We're going to do videos of when we're on other shows like this. It's going to be cool. So it's bonus material. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, no, it's great. We love our Patreons. They paid for our brand new studio. There we go. It's hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I like the paneling. It's looks nice.
Shelby made it. Yeah. And so that's our way of saying thank you and getting content out. Also, I guess this is a good way to close. With the situation and the times that we're in, again, this being recorded on Halloween 2020, mm-hmm. We wanted to get information out quickly and not spend a week editing a radio show, for example, because alternative media like podcasts and the website, your website, my website, are going to be how we get this stuff out and updates on what's going on. And we can motivate people and we can tell people to keep a cool head and not go shoot out insulators and
be prepared with information and have a plan and not just go off willy-nilly and kidnap the governor like they tried to do in Michigan. That would be bad.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. So anyway, that's an important thing. So yeah, Parler, Rumble, we have our videos on Rumble, which is a great alternative to YouTube. And Parler is an alternative to Twitter. We're on MeWe, an alternative to Facebook. We still have our Facebook. and our YouTube channels, but we basically use those to tell people how to come over to the free uncensored platforms like Parler and Rumble. So
that are not being suppressed by Jack Dorsey and his lack of cheekbones. Did you see that? Oh my God.
I wanted to give the guy a roast beef sandwich. And also, you know, I felt like saying if I were in the Senate, which of course we know will never happen, I would say something like, Mr. Dorsey, how's that nose ring going? I mean, that looks great. Normally when people appear before the United States Senate, they take their nose rings out. But hey, you do you.
Yeah, rock and roll, man. Thanks for checking out the Behind the Curtain podcast. I want to thank my buddy Brian Futch for providing me the theme song, I Am America, produced by Cass Anawati. Join us again next time for another episode of Behind the Curtain with Jeff Reynolds.
The ocean, with nothing else but his dream for a better life. His folks over there shook their heads at such a crazy notion, but deep down in his heart he knew he was right. Cleared the way for you and me. You can still hear his spirit sing. I am America. This land is my land, America. I know one day after I'm gone, someone will carry this dream along. And that's what makes this country so strong. I am America. Grandpa volunteered for the war across the ocean. There's no price for his country he wouldn't pay. Like so many others, he fought for the cause with great devotion. Just like his daddy, he led the way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. His stories have faded with his years, but his eyes say it loud and clear. America.